Baseball season is fast approaching, and the Brew Crew are getting ready for a run at a third straight NL Central title.
It is gone!
This is Brewers Weekly, live from spring training from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
It has been every bit of sunny the last few days here in the Valley of the Sun. I'm Dom Catronio. Thanks for joining us. Let's get ready to go with a deep episode today, player-driven, our second of three shows this week. If you missed Monday's show, you can find it in your podcast feeds, Brewers All Access. That one is more broad strokes, a bunch of audio, Tobias Myers, Brandon Woodruff, Jacob Mizorowski, Joey Ortiz, Pat Murphy, of course. So that's more on Monday's episode. Today's episode is all about the players and specifically two guest hosts, if you will. We had a podcast with Rhys Hoskins. We'll be here in this first hour. Great time with him. We chop it up throughout this first hour here today. And then in the second hour, we'll have Aaron Ashby join the program. And again, an interview that we taped earlier today that is chopped up here live for you on WTMJ. We'll also talk a little bit about what we saw today in the split squad, what the rest of the week will hold, as the Brewers do have a couple of updates with injuries, playing time, some little minor nicks and bruises and that sort of thing. Maybe a certain superstar getting back on the field soon. That has been the buzzword of camp from Pat Murphy, the word soon. He's got a lot of Murphisms. And at the end of camp, I did this last year, I'll do it again this year. I've been starting to compile all the funny Murphism stuff that maybe hasn't made it to air. Like, it doesn't make it into my raps and recaps of what we do here at WTMJ, and that could be something funny to listen to. Of just today, we went on like a 5-minute tangent, all of us in the media with Murph, about Creedence Clearwater Revival. I mean, you never know what you're going to get when you walk into Murph's office when we're talking ball and getting ready to go. So that's a quick little run of show of what we're going to have today. Real quick at the top, let's talk about what happened today. Split squad for the Brewers. One squad was in Scottsdale at Salt River Fields taking on Corbin Burnes, and the other one was at home taking on the Dodgers, the only time they'll face the Dodgers this camp, and facing Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Now, if the Brewers lost both games, it's spring training. Nobody cares what your record is in spring training. The Diamondbacks won 7-1. Corbin Carroll hit a grand slam in that game off of Tyler Alexander. He hit his first official Cactus League action. He had a pair of walks. Doesn't sound like he was particularly sharp. I was not there, so I cannot comment much on that. We did see Craig Yoho pitch there. We saw Nick Mears allow an unearned run there. I don't know much other than you of the box score, right? So we'll find out more tomorrow once we're back at camp. I was in Maryvale for Dodgers and Brewers, and this was a fun game for the first three innings for the crew. Another home run from Vinny Capra. Also, the first Cactus League hit for Garrett Mitchell. This was a good lineup here. We also saw Bryce Terang play shortstop. So we'll break down some of the reaction from that game specifically coming up in the next segment. As for what's next for the crew, back at it tomorrow. No radio broadcast tomorrow, but we are on television on FanDuel Sportsnet. So you'll have Jeff Levering and Bill Schroeder on the call on TV. No radio tomorrow anywhere. So it's just that broadcast as they take on the Kansas City Royals. And it'll be the debut of Aaron Civale in Cactus League play as the right-hander gets the ball for Milwaukee. Then on Friday, they'll be headed to Scottsdale, but for the Giants, and to see Willy Adames for the first time in an opposing jersey since he left in free agency. That game is also at 1:05 Arizona time, so 2:05 Central time. And Freddie Peralta and Logan Webb, you know, opening day starters, are going at it in that one. For audio listeners, that one will be available over on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. And then Saturday, back at home for the Texas Rangers coming over from the West Valley of Surprise. Again, 2:10 start Central, 1:10 Arizona time here on WTMJ. And then on Sunday, we're in Goodyear once again. It feels like we're in Goodyear a ton, facing the Guardians again here on 6:20 WTMJ. That game starts at 2:05 Central, 1:05 Arizona time. With all that being said, we got the lay of show, we got the layout up next. We're going to talk about what happened today, some small updates too, and then after that segment, we'll get into Rhys Hoskins' interview, as this is a player-driven Brewers Weekly today, right here on your home of the Brewers, 6:20 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's talk about the Brewers roster, the way too early projection for the roster. I'm Dom Catronio. If you want to join the program, 855-616-1620 is the phone number. Again, 855-616-1620. That's the Saudi Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. I'll be monitoring it throughout the night. Now, a lot of tonight's show is taped, but I'm still here live with you here this evening. If you got questions, you've got thoughts, if you got comments or concerns from these interviews with Reese and with Ashby, please let us know. We'll take a listen and we'll talk it out here on the program. When it comes to the roster, though, a new contender, if you ever played Super Smash Brothers, a new foe has emerged. You know, a new challenger is approaching. Vinny Capra needs to be taken seriously as somebody who can make this roster for the Brewers. Not just because he's got three homers in, what is it, five games or six games or whatever the Brewers have played so far this spring. As we talked about previously with bullpen construction, sometimes something that falls into factor of the opening day roster is your availability of options. And Vinny Capra does not have any options remaining. Now, he's got barely any service time, 84 days of service time to be specific. He's 28 years old. He turned 29 during the season. He's bounced around a little bit of his career. Great story. A senior sign out of Richmond. Got basically a bag of chips and an airplane ticket to sign out of the draft. He was the 20th round pick by the Toronto Blue Jays. Fangraphs reported his signing bonus as $1,000 out of Richmond. And now he's got a chance to be back in the big leagues and make an opening day roster. Spent time with the Blue Jays, eight games. I mean, I would call this like three shots of espresso, not even full cups of coffee for what he's had in the big leagues, 22, 23, and 24, each with a different team. I know the numbers aren't sexy from what we've seen in the big leagues for him. In total, it's only 37 plate appearances, right? I mean, that's nothing. So there's something to be figured out there. Here's why it works in Vinny Capra's favor if he's going to make this team. Number one, positional versatility. He also can play short, not just specifically infield, but sometimes utility infielders aren't able to play shortstop. Vinny can fill in on short on occasion. Granted, he would be third on that depth chart even if he makes the team because of Ortiz and because of Terang. Number two, not just the lack of his options, but the fact that there are options on the players around him available for the Brewers to use to send them to AAA while they figure out what they truly have with somebody like Vinny Capra. So Caleb Durbin, he's got all three option years remaining. This was the first offseason that he was on the 40-man roster. He is yet to make his big league debut. Tyler Black, now currently he's dealing with a little bit of a bulky back, but the Brewers do not expect anything serious in that regard when it comes to Tyler Black. He was optioned last year after making his big league debut, but still, he's got two option years remaining. That can certainly give him more time, get every day at-bats at first base in Nashville, continue to refine his footwork at that position. And then finally, number three, the signing of Mark Canna. And also, I should also mention one more other guy that has options is Andrew Monasterio that could be optioned. But the third point is Mark Canna. Signing Mark Canna gives you a traditional backup first baseman and a platoon righty DH. And let's say in this scenario, like we talked about on Monday, let's say that Vinny Capra is on the team. Now, he is your bench utility infielder. And on occasion, we'll get the start at third base. Now, this is a decision whether it's going to be Oliver Dunn or if it's going to be Caleb Durbin at third base. I imagine we'll see some sort of platoon there if that's going to happen, assuming Ortiz is at short, assuming Terang is at second. That's how we're going with this exercise. While having Capra, it means one or the other. It's Capra or Durbin if you're going to keep all right-handed bench. I don't see them keeping both if Mark Canna is going to be on this team. Because if you have an all-righty bench and you have all the other lefties in the lineup, and that means Tyler Black is in AAA, then you're kind of just playing the platoons and playing the righty-lefty. And without Blake Perkins available right now, at least for the first month of the season, it sounds like, you're not going to have very many advantages if a tough lefty comes into the game defensively, right? You don't have that traditional center field replacement. Like, Garrett's going to have to face lefties. Sal's going to have to face lefties. Yelly already faces lefties, but you get my point. There's going to be a window there for a lefty specialist to come in against the Brewers, and they have to decide, all right, do we want to go with our right-handed bat off the bench and lose something defensively? I see Capra not overreacting here as a candidate because of the options more than anything. Give him a chance, see what happens. We talked about it on Monday, but Thiago Vieira made the opening day roster last year because he had no options. The other guys did. Thiago pitched, didn't pitch all that great. Also, his role wasn't the sexiest either. He was the mop-up guy, and so that guy becomes much more expendable. Do you want Capra to be subject to waivers and somebody else can claim him, or do you risk it like they did with Eric Haas last year and push him through waivers right at the end of camp? Hope he stays within your organization, and by pushing him through waivers and outrighting him, he goes to AAA, or he could reject it and go to free agency. So these are the things that are on the table right now for Vinny Capra that we'll be monitoring. One other note that we do want to talk about today, and that's Garrett Mitchell. Garrett goes yard today. If you haven't seen the video, I shared it on my socials. Garrett, a hanging breaking ball with a two-strike count against Yamamoto. I mean, he was a hanger of hangers, and he was all over it. He had struck out earlier in the day, and I see some of the social media discourse, and I'm not saying a small pocket of the fan base is like the entire fan base. I know the guy strikes out a lot. He knows he strikes out a lot, and his strikeout rate is extremely high. Even when he had that electric month at the end of 2022, his strikeout rate was 40%. But you take trade-offs, right? If you're striking out a million, you got to do something else. I look at Ellie De La Cruz. We've talked about this with him. He had 216 strikeouts last year, despite all that production that he put up, right? He had a ton of errors at short. He struck out a bunch at the plate, and yet he still put up a six-win season. That's Ellie De La Cruz, that is. I'm not saying Garrett Mitchell is going to put up a six-war season, but if we can finally see a full year out of Garrett Mitchell, can we imagine, can we get excited about what he could get the chance to do numbers-wise as an everyday outfielder, as somebody that can steal bags? He's got easily 20-20 potential. Does he have more than that? Remains to be seen if he can stay healthy, and it would be really fun to watch Garrett Mitchell. So we're going to be monitoring him all spring long. Remember, he had a great spring last year. He's going to get as many at-bats against lefties as possible, especially now with Perkins out. And by all accounts, let's hope he makes it through healthy, knock on some wood. And you'll hear Rhys Hoskins say it in a little bit during our interview with him. He's pointing out as Garrett Mitchell's guy ready to take that next step and see what he can become into 2025. So let's take our next break. We will come back leading into the first of a three-part interview with Rhys Hoskins. So each are about 7 minutes time or so each. We'll preview each one. Again, my thanks to Rhys yesterday for sitting down and having this conversation with us, but we'll tell you more about it coming up after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's get into it. Some of the main events of tonight's show. Rhys Hoskins back for year two with the crew. He's very honest about how he felt about his season last year. In the beginning, though, we kind of set the stage for some big life events that he's gone through. He recently received the Marvin Miller Award, which is the highest honor the Players Union gives for philanthropic efforts to fellow players. So he earned that last postseason. Also, welcomed a baby girl, Rory, to the world. So we talk about that at the start of the interview. Then, in the second part of the interview, we'll talk more about his offense, what went wrong last year, what he liked about last year. Also, some very honest and some great candor about the playoffs last year. And then finally, we'll kind of shift the lens into what the Brewers can do into 2025 and how excited he is to exercise his option and try to play well heading into free agency once again. So without further ado, here's Rhys Hoskins. Rhys Hoskins, welcome back to spring training. Another one in Arizona for you. I'm sure last year was a bit more of an adjustment than this year's, but the biggest adjustment for you is dad life. Congratulations to you, and how have things been in this past eventful offseason for you?
Yeah, Dom, appreciate you, first of all, having me back. Being a dad, being a parent is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but also the most rewarding. She's growing faster than I've ever would have thought. I've heard from multiple either teammates that have kids or my parents or my wife's parents that, you know, the days may seem long, but the months and years go by faster than you'll ever know. And I've learned that pretty quick. So Rory's been great. We're learning something new every day about her, about being parents. And we're just trying to enjoy every moment that we have, especially now that we're getting into the season. And, you know, time is of the essence with just us traveling so much. So soaking up every minute we can in spring, and then off we'll go.
When you sit back and look back at that series in Philly and the reception you got, now that there is a little bit of distance from that, for you and Jamie and for everyone around you in your orbit, what did that truly mean to you, of just to see some familiar faces but also get the recognition that you got? Was that a big hurdle for you to clear last year?
Yeah, I don't know, so much a hurdle, right? Like, I definitely didn't go back there expecting that. Was pretty overwhelming, to be completely honest, in the best type of way. Emotional. You know, obviously I got to see a bunch of people that I grew up around, essentially, from a 24-year-old kid trying to find his way, make a career for himself. And then, you know, I left there as a 31-year-old and married and lived there and, you know, kind of became a man, so to say, there in Philadelphia. So, yeah, it was a special moment. It's something that, you know, I'll never forget, really. I think it's one of the many cool things that this sport that we love can provide. It's fans, it's athletes, and I think it's those type of moments that, you know, through the ups and downs that baseball can bring, it's those types of things that really stick out. So really cool for me, really cool for my family, and, you know, it's just cool to see that, you know, maybe I did a few things right in my time there, which is pretty special.
And part of that is you earning the Marvin Miller Philanthropic Award this past year. And
yeah,
that's an honor that, quite frankly, that the Roberto Clemente Award, it's so hard to pick one, obviously. But to have that from your peers and to have that from the union and to have that from his name on that, how do you react to earning something like that?
Yeah, it's super humbling. I think the biggest part of that is, right, is it's selected by your peers, these people that, you know, you're in this crazy industry, this crazy life with, you know, going through the day to day, trying to figure out how to be the best baseball player, night in and night out. But also guys recognize that, you know, a lot of effort goes into being a good human as well. You know, philanthropic endeavors have always been something that have been important in my life, really starting in high school. That was just something that was a requirement of us. I went to a Jesuit high school and we had to do, you know, community service essentially to graduate. So it kind of turned in from something that felt like something that I had to do, and now it's something that I really enjoy doing. There's nothing like volunteering your time and your effort, and I think that people in need really recognize that, and that's just a special thing for a community, but also for yourself if you can think about it in some sort of selfish way. So yeah, special award, that's one that stays on the mantle for sure. Something that I'll be proud to, you know, share with my family throughout the rest of my life. But just really cool that, you know, we've gotten to impact now a couple different communities, you know, throughout my career, and we look forward to continuing that.
We're chatting with Reese Hoskins here on WTMJ. Let's talk a little ball now. I mean, 27 homers a year ago. Yep. We were joking with Pat Murphy earlier in camp, just, yeah, 27 homers, most players would be super thrilled with that. But he kind of hinted that maybe that's not a number you're happy with, even though you spent a whole season off. Is there truth to that, and how do you assess last season for you?
Some truth for sure, right? I will tell you straight up, like, I know there's more in there. I assess last season as a success in the fact that I played 130 games, coming off a, you know, a pretty major injury and missing a full season. Really, I felt like if I was able to get the games played, that usually the counting statistics usually tend to show up. I missed a little bit of time with a hamstring, but, you know, just the fact that I was able to basically stay off the injured list without any knee issues was a huge success in itself. I bookended the year pretty well, pretty normal for what I'm used to seeing in terms of from a production standpoint. The thing that we're always chasing in this game is consistency, and that's really what I'm after this year. Just being a consistent force within this lineup that Murph knows, you know, he can throw me out there every single day, and I got a chance to produce at the plate every night. So excited for more games this year. I already told Murph my goal this year is 150, and I feel like, you know, some of those other, those home run numbers, the RBI numbers, the other numbers that we really look at, especially in terms of, quote, power hitters, I think those will show up if the 150 game mark is there. So I'm super stoked that, you know, I got a full year under my belt again, a full off season where I'm not rehabbing an injury, really ready to hit the ground running here.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's keep on rolling with our interview with Reese Hoskins on a special two-hour edition of Brewers Weekly tonight. Let's start getting into some more offense postseason last year and just sort of debriefing from everything that went down last year. Here's more from Reese.
When you assess the postseason, it's sort of a different bucket. And I know you have postseason experience, and it wasn't the postseason that neither you or the crew wanted.
Yep.
And that's kind of the worst taste to have in your mouth all off season. What do you look back on, if there's any positives, or if you just want to be real and if it's all negative of the fact that you came up short?
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality is like that is a crushing loss, right? To come back and tie a series and then have exactly the guy on the mound that we want on the mound, with a couple huge emotional home runs previously in that game that really, you know, you just felt it in the stadium that this was, it all was set up for us to continue on in the playoffs, which really, in a baseball sense, like that's what you can control. And after that, it's really up to whatever is going to happen. But the way I think I look at it is that those crushing moments really are huge from a development standpoint, because we're gonna find ourselves in moments like that again, and you remember that, right? We as perfectionists, we as baseball players, tend to remember negatives more than positives because we're always chasing more. And we will find ourselves in that position. We have now experience with those huge moments. And I think, you know, in the long run, you really believe that you're better off for that. So especially, look, like you said, I have some postseason experience. I've been super bad in the postseason, and I've had some really cool postseason moments where success has shown up. But the more you find yourself in those moments, the more you believe that you're going to come through in the end. And especially for our young guys, where that was kind of the first time tasting that, that type of crushing loss, I think, can be a positive in the long run.
So sort of a vulnerable follow-up to that is you were pinch hit for with Jake.
Sure.
And, you know, to somebody on the outside, you know, here's a guy that's played in the major market, that's played in the postseason, that understands his role, and then the guy came in after him and gave the team the lead. I know you're a great teammate. I know you're a class act. And I know that the competitors, like, wish that was me. How do you react to everything that went down in the eighth inning before ultimately what happened in the ninth?
Yeah, look, like, I'd be lying to you if I said of course I want to be in that. I want to be in that the next time as well. But the playoffs has a different feel to it, where it really doesn't matter what number 12 does, or number 9, or number 22, or number 11. It's really what the Brewers are able to do. The pennant up there, the flag up there says Brewers, and that's the type of thing that you're just happy to be a part of something that's a little bit bigger than yourself, because you have a chance to do something that's, legacy building, be a part of something that lasts forever, right? Flags fly forever is what they say. So, yeah, like, nobody likes to be that guy. But the reality is, you know, whether or not we win or lose that game, I had a part in that game that led to that moment. And really cool for Jake to be ready to step in and provide a huge spark off the bench and put us ahead. Looking forward to whenever the next big moment comes, because they're on the way.
Moving to a more positive front and into 2025, you're one of the returning pillars on this team. You're one of the guys that Murph has praised, and you're in the pillar meetings, those monthly check-ins. Can you give us a little picture of what the room is like for you guys? And obviously there's going to be a few pieces departed from those meetings, but how you take that role as seriously as you do to be one of the veteran leaders on this club?
Yeah, well, just to give you a little perspective of that room, right, it's an honest room. It's not always pretty, but the old saying is that brothers tend to fight. Mm-hmm. And you get through those hard times of the season when everything is out on the table and everybody knows where everyone's coming from. So it's super cool that Murph, you know, provides us that forum. And I think as a whole and as a team, we as some of those older veteran guys can kind of put the rest of the clubhouse in a good position to keep on keeping on, basically. And you know, I was lucky in Philly to have some older presence, really great presence, to give some perspective. You know, all of the cliche things that you hear, but it's so true. It's a long season. We're obviously playing to win tonight, but you kind of always have to have a long-term goal in mind. And that's a role that, like you said, it's an important one in any clubhouse, because sometimes there are young guys that really don't know what is next. And just having people that have done it before kind of leading the way is comforting for those guys and allows, you know, the most talent, I think, to come out on the field.
When it comes to the youth of this team, Jackson obviously comes to mind, but yet you sit and you look and, okay, Sal's only played two seasons. Bryce has only played two seasons. Joey had a cup of coffee and then one season. I mean, it's still extremely young, and yet all they know is success. You, when you arrived,
yep,
didn't know success.
For sure.
And now we're tasting it again. How do you remind these players, enjoy it? Because if you have a long, long career like everybody hopes, it's not always this way. And to continue to enjoy all the success that the Brewers are having right now.
Yeah, I mean, you see it around the league, I think, right? It's like, mm-hmm, that's the first perspective giver, I guess. It's not always green grass and wins. There's somebody has to lose every night too. So what's cool about these guys though is there's no, right, like they're not content. Every guy's out here working. I mean, obviously you saw the leap that Bryce was able to take last year. Nobody would be surprised if, you know, you say any of those names and every one of them or one of them or two of them take that type of leap just because of the work that they put in, starting now, really in spring, but, you know, also throughout the year. So that's really cool for me to see as somebody that has seen some bad baseball and been on some bad baseball teams. It tends to, you know, guys tend to lose some wind in their sails and then the work kind of stops or becomes inconsistent. And that's when it kind of snowballs on some teams and organizations. But with the staff that we have in place, makes it easy to work, makes it easy to want to work. So I'm excited for these guys really to just to keep on growing. Another name that you didn't mention, but Garrett Mitchell really is, yeah, another guy that I think a lot of us are looking at taking a huge step this year. You can see it anytime this guy's on the field. We just got to figure out how to keep him on the field. So, you know, our Mark said it really, like there's such an infusion of young talent on this team. And really, I think as they go, we're going to go.
When the team gets together, and you mentioned Mark's meeting and you mentioned Murph, you know, kind of having the floor. When you sit there and listen, I mean, I know for an experienced guy like you, like you've heard these speeches before and sometimes they're a little different. Sometimes there's a slight tweak to them. What is different, if there is a difference, about this year's message versus last year's message?
I mean, this was kind of Murph's point this year when he spoke to us, but like, there's not really a huge need for it to be different, right? Like, we're still kind of looked at as unproven and maybe underrated and overlooked. We lost, obviously, a couple huge pieces that have been a huge part of this organization's success over the last 4 or 5 years. But that doesn't mean that we're not in a position, I think, to compete every night. Teams may not know who we have, but teams will feel us on a nightly basis. And that was something I think that we really preached last year. And if you saw the product on the field every night, we play the right way. We play hard. And that's something that tends to show up over the long haul, like I've said already. We thrive on pressure, thrive on putting pressure on teams. And Murph's message was that. It was just exactly that. Like, we found some success of trying to be uncommon in that sense, and there's no reason why we can't try to repeat that. So in a sense, it was different because it was kind of the same this year. And I think that he's got a really good point with that.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, one more segment of our interview with Rhys Hoskins. A little more about 2025 and the rest of the club. Take a listen. Let's get ready to wrap things up here, though, too. And to your point about being intense and thriving in pressure and these teams will feel us, I just think back to opening weekend, man, and you setting the tone. I mean, the reaction that it all became, was it overblown? Maybe. But I think, and Garrett told this to me on our podcast, where it was, oh, all right, set the tone real quick. Like, we're not underdogs. We can play with the big boys, as the Mets stole all the headlines this past offseason. And, you know, you're playing hard-nosed baseball. You're playing the game as it was meant to be played. And if the big market team is already flustered by that, you've got them where you want them. Now, ultimately, they had the trump card at the very end of the season.
Sure.
But do you agree that you were a part of setting that tone in the beginning of the year last year in New York?
Yeah, I would like to, right? But again, right, like that's something that might now be uncommon. And if that's what it takes to, you know, to prove it to ourselves, to kind of band together as a team, to show that, you know, we're ready night in and night out to compete, to do whatever it takes to win, then I think we have a group of, you know, 40 guys in that clubhouse that that are ready to step up and do that. And that's what makes a Brewer special.
As you enter this season, you exercise your option, which is your right. You've earned that. And now you potentially get ready for free agency once again. And I know it didn't go the way you wanted to the first time in regards to coming off an ACL, having seen what's happened to the first base market. Obviously, you want to perform. Obviously, the Brewers want you to perform. But what will you most focus on as to say, I will have a successful season if fill in the blank?
If I'm on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm on the field. You know, I've already touched on a few, I think, pretty big key points for me was that I had pretty much a full year after a major injury. There's obviously a physical side to that, but I think more importantly, there's a mental side to that. And I had a full offseason really to kind of get after some training that I hadn't had in 3, 4, 5 years. You know, I'm a familiar face now here instead of being the new guy. And that just, I think, you know, all of that puts me in a position to be ready to be the Rhys Hoskins that I have been throughout my career and ready to be a part of a winning team.
It's a fantastic answer. I think it's all you can really ask for.
Yeah,
this game's hard enough.
For sure, right? Like, and I think that's true for a lot of guys, right? If you're on the field every day, that's the best chance for the talent that we all have to come out over the long season.
On a lighter note, one thing I'm trying to do in these longer form interviews is turn the mics, as in you understand the media side of the world. You understand what we're trying to do. Do you have any questions for me? I know you haven't done a job interview in a very long time.
Sure.
I think we ask you guys so many questions. It can be about anything, media world, my life, whatever.
Sure.
Like, you have any questions for me as we'll wrap it up with that?
well, okay, I'll kind of pin some questions that, you know, we tend to get asked, like, why do you think that we are able to have, you know, success on a pretty consistent basis here? I guess specifically about last year is something that I was a part of, but what do you see from, you know, your magic box up there?
The ivory tower.
About why, you know, why we're able to win as many games as we do.
I see a team that is going back to a formula that worked. We saw teams in the 80s. Now, granted, there's no more AstroTurf concrete. You hit a chopper and you're guaranteed a single. But we now see teams that have value to put the ball in play, that have value in defense, especially in the new shifting era that we're in now. And furthermore, if you're not going to hit homers, you got to do something else well. And what the Brewers do well is they steal bags. And you stole a couple. I'm not leaving you out of this conversation.
More than zero.
But I said this on my show last night where everyone talks about homers. In fact, this team was third, I think, in all of Major League Baseball in homers in 2022. And they missed the playoffs. You know, your team snuck in there at the end.
Yep.
And you hit a ton of homers that season, too. And it's just like, if it was one formula, we would have figured it out. Now, I'm not saying the Dodgers and Yankees don't hit homers. They certainly do. But if you're not going to do that, you do something else well. And, oh, by the way, they develop their own pitching.
Sure.
They develop their own system with the bullpen. They have found a way to make that work. And people just want to keep riding off Milwaukee. That's fine. We'll see you in August when you're looking up at the standings. Like, oh, they made another savvy trade. They're in first place in their division. Why are we acting surprised? That's how I feel. Because, as you know, we're down here. I mean, Todd and Adam and I were looking at each other like, why are they continue to doubt this team? They just won 93 games, it's just so odd to me. It really is.
I've talked to a few, you know, I guess more national writers. And I think they're even kind of willing to admit it at the end of the year. It's like, well, I don't really know why we talked about the Brewers the way we did at the beginning of the season. But here they are. Here we are again, kind of in the same role this year of being a little bit overlooked. They lost some players. Being an underdog is not a bad role to be in, though. And I think, you know, we as a team embrace that. So I appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, that's all I need, man. I think it's a fun team. You guys are very forthcoming with the media, so we appreciate that for schmoes like me. And it's a fun brand of baseball to talk about. And what more could you really ask for in this sometimes too negative world of baseball?
For sure.
Where I'm in the boat of, let's talk about all the good stuff that's happening, and then we can fix the bad stuff. But we got to highlight the good before we fix the bad, because I think we're tipped on the scales in the wrong direction.
Sure. It's a tough game. And admittedly, it's one that is easy on TV or can look, and I think it's mostly the players' fault, right? Like, we have a tendency to make things look easier than they are.
Well, that's because you're the best in the world.
But no, I think you're spot on with that, and it's great to hear that it's a fun brand of baseball to watch, because, gosh dang, it's a fun brand of baseball to be a part of.
Thanks for making the time, man. Really
appreciate
this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Have a great season. Stay healthy. And looking forward to maybe doing this again maybe at the end of the season in a parade down Wisconsin Avenue. That'd be cool.
That would be pretty sweet. Thanks, Don.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, just a quick little segment here. Re-rack things. Again, thanks to Reese. Hope you enjoyed that interview. Also, Aaron Ashby coming up in the second hour. We're not done here at the top of the hour. We got a whole another hour to talk about, another longer conversation with Aaron Ashby. So we're going to take a breather. We're going to have the news here at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. I'll be on the other side of the news. We'll give you some injury updates, some bullpen thoughts, and then we'll get into the interview with Aaron Ashby. So 1 hour down, another hour to go. Stay with us on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Baseball season is fast approaching, and the Brew Crew are getting ready for a run at a third straight NL Central title.
It is gone!
This is Brewers Weekly, live from spring training from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
All right, keep it rolling. We're back for another hour, going until 10 o'clock tonight here on WTMJ, live from Arizona in my childhood bedroom that Doesn't look like I ever lived here. I'm Tom Catronio. If you're in the market for a house, let me tell you what, here in the Southeast Valley. But anyway, let's, again, tell you what we got coming in case you just joined in the middle of the program. We're going to do some injury updates here in the next segment. We're going to talk to Aaron Ashby for a little bit coming up as well. Three segments worth of that interview, too. We'll see how much time we have left at the end of it. We're going to talk a little bullpen here, though, too. And I've seen a couple tweets. Let me just get another rumor out of the way here and what's to come on Friday. But Friday, we're talking to Matt Arnold, and we're going to record that interview tomorrow, and I will ask him this question myself. I don't believe there's truth to the Ryan McMahon rumors, because these days on social media, I can make it look like a professional account, say somebody is linked to somebody, disappear like a fart in the wind, and face no consequences. No one asks any further questions. And then people are coming to me and to Todd and to Adam and to the people that are actually connected. And then we ask, and they're like, no. And so we'll find out, okay? I promise. But I don't see this happening for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, I think the Brewers would have already done it if they wanted Ryan McMahon. And I know the Rockies are a rudderless ship in the middle of the Pacific Ocean right now. And McMahon did sign an extension. I mean, he has signed through the 2027 season, taking him to what would likely be 10 years of service time. But for McMahon, second rounder, they hit on him at a modern day. He's a solid player. He really is. And if you're wondering, oh, what about Coors? Like, is he actually good outside of Coors Field? Well, we go straight to the home and road splits, as we always do. 720 OPS at home, 724 OPS on the road. Okay, answers that question. For McMahon, he, again, under team control through 2027 with an extension that's worth roughly $14 million per year when you average it out. He's got $12 million this year, $16 million next year, $16 million in 27. No options, no opt-outs, no nothing like that. When you think about that kind of cash on the Brewers, I mean, they've got $18 million at first with Reese. They've got $16 million in Woodruff, and they don't know how many innings they're going to get out of him. You've got the money in Yelly, $26.5, and you've got the Churio team-friendly deal, the Freddie team-friendly deal, the Ashby team-friendly deal. I just don't see it being a fit unless the Rockies blow him away with money given to him. But I just don't see it being a fit because, like I said, I think it would have already happened if it was going to happen. They're going to roll with Caleb Durbin and Oliver Dunn and Vinny Capra. And then maybe, in the middle of the year, we revisit this. But I don't see that happening. As for the bullpen, Aaron Ashby, in this interview we're going to hear in just a little bit, talked about he's going to keep rolling as a starter. But whatever role he is going to be thrown into, he is going to be ready to go. Part of the bullpen shakeup is what are the Brewers going to do with Connor Thomas? And Connor pitched yesterday. If you're not familiar with that name, he's the Rule 5 pick. And he's, I don't want to say it's like, oh my gosh, the whole bullpen is stopping to watch Connor Thomas and his slider-cutter combination. But the simple truth is he has not made his big league debut. He was selected in the Rule 5 draft, meaning he needs to break camp with the Brewers if he's going to pitch in the big leagues for the Brewers this year. He cannot be optioned. However, if the Brewers decide maybe with 2 weeks to go in camp, he's not going to make our club, they send him back to St. Louis. That also frees up a spot on your 40-man roster. And maybe you make another move around that. But I said this before, I'll say it again, with the options, the guys that do not have options are Nick Mears and Yoel Piamps. May or may not have an effect, but I think it will, and that you might as well start the year with them because you're not going to get the chance to retain them if you try to cut them at the end of camp. Everybody always needs arms. So you've got McGill, who, by the way, hasn't pitched in the game yet. Talk about that soon. Jared Koenig, he'll be back. Yoel Piamps, just mentioned him. Brian Hudson, he pitched great yesterday against Cleveland. Nick Mears, he gave up an unearned run today, saw a punchy as well. Elvis Peguero is on the fan depth roster. I don't think he makes the team out of camp. Tyler Alexander is a TBD as a swingman. Connor Thomas is a TBD as a swingman. And I'll reiterate this too. We've talked about Craig Yoho a lot. Yoho is not on the 40-man roster. He's a non-roster invitee. So, like we're talking about with that 40-man move, if Connor Thomas ultimately does get returned while in camp, there's a chance that someone like Yoho, someone like Davey Garcia, someone like Vinny Natoli, someone like Tyler J, who is not on the 40-man roster, can be added. I also don't think Abner Uribe will open the team on opening weekend because, A, the suspension, four games, has to serve it. B, he's got one option year remaining, so you can move him up and down this year, and then the decision comes next year if he's ready to go and be a conscious part of this bullpen. Another wild stat as I'm looking at it here with Abner Uribe, we've been talking about him for the last 2 years. He's still got less than a year of service time under his belt. He's still only got 121 days of service time. A full year is 180. I mean, we're talking about a guy that still needs to kind of do it again. He hasn't done it since 23, and we'll talk about that plenty with Aaron Ashby about how he's been since the injury. Other guys that are non-roster invitees like Easton McGee, Tom Pannone, who pitched today, Bruce Zimmerman, Miz didn't pitch great yesterday, just going to be honest. Now, he was really happy-go-lucky about it, but the walk showed up again. The velo was there, but I'm not going to hold it too much against him. It's outing number one in spring training. We got 4 weeks to go. He'll probably get at least five more outings to figure out what the Brewers want to do with him. So that's a quick little peek at the bullpen. Let's talk about injuries, and then we'll talk to Aaron Ashby. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620 is the phone number. That is the Siding Unlimited Talk, WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Once more time, 855-616-1620. Back with more after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
1 week into spring training, overreactions abound everywhere. We're not going to do that here on the pod. I'm Dominic Catronio. We got another live show on Friday, wrapping up this big, busy week of Brewers Weeklies, because in part, we're going to kind of disappear here on the program for a little while. We do not have a Brewers Weekly next Thursday because the Brewers are playing a night game. We got a handful of night games this spring. It's odd. They'll be playing a night game, so that'll be 8:15 Central Time, so no show for us. Catch it here on WTMJ. And then the following Thursday, the Bucks are playing, as is the same with the following Thursday, the 20th. Then the 27th is opening day, and we'll have a live show, I believe, in the week leading up to opening day to get you ready for the season. With that said, it's a reminder, from tomorrow, 4 weeks from opening day, that's a lot of time. And we talked about it today with Pat Murphy. You know, once pitchers are going more than two innings and getting ready to see a lineup for a second time, that's when we can no longer call it quote-unquote early in spring training. We're not there yet. Freddy Peralta is going to probably throw multiple innings on Friday as that kind of starts the next turn around the rotation. As Freddy will go Friday, we don't know who will go Saturday and Sunday, but you can start to count dates. Who's going to be going behind Freddy? And you start to figure things out. We haven't seen Nestor throw in a game yet. I imagine that could happen this weekend. We haven't seen Brandon Woodruff throw his next live, but we're reminding everybody he's probably not going to be on the opening day roster. So there's an IL spot and an active roster spot that the Brewers are going to be using. When it comes to actual injuries, DL Hall is still shut down for another week, maybe two, while recovering from his lat. So he hasn't been throwing. He has just been doing very light workouts. And will begin the ramp-up process, essentially starting his spring training over once the lat has been proven to have been healed enough. Then they will have to decide what kind of a role he will be in. Will it be in the bullpen, or will it be as a starter? Another guy that you're going to be without for pretty much the most month of April, Blake Perkins, all signs to his fractured shin point to healing on schedule. Best case scenario, by the end of April, early May. I'd imagine more on the May timeline for him, but he feels great. He's walking around. I mean, he was telling us in the media the other day, he's glad he doesn't have to wear a walking boot, doesn't have to walk on crutches. It's healing like it's supposed to. Just a fracture on his tibia. They didn't want it to get hit again. He can't run full speed, can't run full pressure on that leg right now. Next up on the injury front is Tyler Black. Now, this is not overly reported, but Tyler has been dealing with a little bit of a tight back. He's been back on the field moving around, but he has not been back into a game yet. But again, we got 4 weeks' time. It's tough development for him. Mark Canna's not hurt. He's just redeveloping. When watching his first batting practice session with the Brewers yesterday, they were down there on the stadium at American Family Fields of Phoenix, and Canna was just taking swings and just kind of put a big smile on his face of like, I haven't hit on the field since the end of last season. I've been hitting in a cage, and I don't even have hit tracks. And he was really excited to be back out there. Manny Margot, we might see him at some point this week, too. He is ramping up after his free agent sign as well. Those guys are not injured. They're just ramping when it comes to getting ready. And then finally, the man that everyone wants to talk about, we talked about it on a Monday, is Christian Yelich. As Pat Murphy said it, expect him when the calendar turns, as in to March. He's full participant. He's hit back-to-back days, batting practice on the field. He's been running. He's been fielding. We are going to see him, quote-unquote, soon. And I've been telling Yelly, I'm not going to talk to you with a microphone until you get in the game. Because what question is there for me to ask that hasn't already been answered? How you feeling?
Good.
Do you think you'll be ready for opening day?
Yes.
What do you think about your young team? We're young and we're overlooked. I mean, like, I don't want to have him repeat himself for the umpteenth time. So we'll talk to him once he actually gets into games. I can assure you, he's looking healthy. He's looking A-okay. That's your little injury update. A small update, actually, too, with Trevor McGill. He was just a little bit set back on the way into camp with some soreness. He's back moving around and totally fine there. And as a closer, take your time. Spring training is not for the closers. Spring training is for the starters. So he'll take his time. And again, in the words of Pat Murphy, soon. Okay, works for me. Aaron Ashby coming up on the other side of the break. Ashby is coming on for a really important year for his development because comes on the scene strong in 21, gets hurt in 22, really loses all of 23 because of it, and wasn't himself in the beginning of 24, and then something clicked in the second half, pitches well in Nashville, comes back to the big leagues, pitches well. He had a couple spot starts. And then, ultimately, though, in the playoffs, didn't go his way. We talk about that, too. We talk about the extension. We talk about everything that goes into Aaron Ashby being the lefty Aaron Ashby. That's coming up next here on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, without further ado, I promise there is no Kansas City Chiefs talk in this conversation. That usually tends to be a lot of our conversations talk about football. Miz is a Chiefs fan, too. Dawson's a Chiefs. I'm surrounded by so many Chiefs fans in the clubhouse. I'm not going to reveal who I'm a fan of. But nonetheless, Aaron Ashby, talking ball, talking the extension, talking how excited he is for 2025 right here on WTMJ. Welcome back.
Thank
Spring
you.
Training.
Yeah.
Healthy. Velo's there. We saw you pitch the other day in Scottsdale. Maybe the command wasn't quite what you wanted, mm-hmm. but it was your first one. So yeah. As things ramp up, and we'll see multiple up-downs here soon, we'll see longer outings, what are the goals and the steps to make sure everything's moving properly?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just kind of goes into the timing of how the body's moving down the mound. A lot of what spring training is I guess first you kind of establish your foundation in the off season. If you come in here searching for a foundation, I think you're kind of probably behind on things. But you kind of work all off season to establish that foundation of strength, endurance, and all that. And then you get here and you kind of fine tune. For me, it's the timing and kind of where my body's at moving down the mound. So Jim and Hookie are kind of all-knowing of how my body moves, just working with them the last, I think it's seven, it might be six, but I've been working with Jim and Hookie a long time, so they kind of see things that I'm not able to see, that's kind of what spring training is just establishing that timing of where you're at.
In your eyes, how important was this past off season for you to be in a position ready to go like you are now, given we saw the scar tissue finally break for you last year, mm-hmm. we saw the velo come back, we saw a different role for you,
yeah.
and now you're auditioning as a starter once again?
Yeah, I think just to be able to go into this last off season healthy and feeling correct was just a major win. it's kind of the first offseason that I've had that's been normal since, honestly, like the end of the 21 season. 22, we kind of ended the season a little banged up, and then obviously got hurt in the offseason there. So it was just a breath of fresh air to get in there and know exactly what needs to get better, what needs to stay the same, and to kind of just build on that strength. And so, yeah, it was a really great off season, feel like we have a really good foundation there.
What do you feel like needs to get better for 2025?
Command. I think command will always be my answer, and just establishing, basically the sinker early. If we can command the sinker early and establish that pitch in the strike zone, everything else is going to play better off that. And then also just knowing when I have room to be out of the zone and when I don't. I think that's something that, is kind of this next step in pitching, but also being a starter, is not wasting pitches, getting guys out when you can get guys out, and kind of realizing that when you're on the mound in the moment can be tough. A lot of veteran pitchers do it really well and make it look easy, but it's not that easy. So I think learning hitters and learning counts better to make myself more efficient in the starting role.
I remember your rookie year when you were, like, your 0-2 numbers weren't terrible. The prettiest.
Terrible.
I think among, like, qualified pitchers, they were maybe, like, I think they hit, like, 340 off you or something. I was like, so you obviously are identifying the problem and understand what needs to happen.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was just, like, in 21, we kind of, like, people just don't know, and I was able to get guys out with the slider, and then it was like 22, I would get to two strikes and like not put guys away. It was just like they kind of sat on slider, or they just sat on off speed, and it was just you kind of come in, you almost get to surprise the league, and then the league like learns you very fast, and it's like, all right, like I need to adjust to that. And so there's things that you have to adjust to every year. I'm sure there'll be something this year that I need to adjust to in the middle of the season, and it's really just trying to make those adjustments as fast as you can, and realizing them as fast as you can.
The at-bat that's seared in my brain from your rookie year is the at-bat against Voit. The heater, like strange. You're going to face a million righties in your, that's just the nature of being a hard-throwing lefty.
Mm-hmm.
Is the sinker, like you just mentioned, like sinker command and what you want to do with it. We know your stuff's wicked and we know you can snap breaking balls, but it all does simply come back to the heater for you, especially against righties. It's a riding sinker. Is that a good way to look at it? It's not a sinker like I've seen before.
Yeah, I think that's kind of... That was like a one-off deal.
Yeah.
That was one of the guys where I just saw like a hole in the swing up there, and he just kept swinging at it. And I was like, well, I can... That to me, like I could throw that pitch every single pitch. Like that pitch doesn't necessarily require like a lot of thought. Like it's just like, let's throw it as hard as I can and just like let it carry out of the zone. Mm-hmm. Like it's more like the glove side sinker down and into a righty where I'm like, I need to execute that pitch. So I think that just going back to the movement of that, I think my sinker is more of like a ground ball getter, a depthier sinker now than maybe that sinker to Voit was. But yeah, there's definitely like a shift in the way it moves, and when you throw it up, it kind of has the tendency to kind of want to ride more arm side, and when I throw it down, it has the tendency to sink more, I guess you could say. So it just it kind of depends on where it's at in the zone.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
We still got more with Aaron Ashby, two more segments worth. I'm Dom Catronio. We hear about guys who sign extensions and how what a genius move by the Brewers. Sign up this guy like they did in 21. Well, it's always a genius move for the pitcher too. And pitching is, you see two sides of the coin, right? A guy, unfortunately, like Ashby, who's been injured a lot, and you can see where the investment worked out for him. And then the other side of the coin is a guy like Freddie Peralta. And the Brewers have certainly got a return on their investment with what Freddie Peralta has become. Now, Ash talks about that coming up in this segment and talking about why he's excited to not necessarily live up to that contract, but sort of prove why he was offered it in the first place.
So I'm going to shift gears here a little bit and ask you about now in your big league career. It's less than you would have hoped after signing the extension that you signed. Now, I'm in the opinion of that great move by you and great move by the Brewers to set your future, to feel comfortable. Now, there's an added competitor in you. It's like, well, I want to live up to what I signed for and what I know I'm capable of doing.
For sure.
Mentally, how do you feel about how it's gone? Obviously there are injuries, but trying to unleash the competitor that's within you.
Yeah, I think that when we were kind of going through those negotiations, it was never like trying to live up to it. It was just like, this is looking at it, as you said, as this is a good deal for a young pitcher. This is a good deal for the team. And just like being who I am, like that, I was never like had this thought of, oh, I need to live up to this contract. Obviously getting hurt the year after signing it sucks, and you don't feel like yeah, I'm missing out, but also like I still have time to like make up for that. Maybe not necessarily make up for that, but just perform at what I can be. Mm-hmm. And then it's like it's good for both parties. So I want to be the best pitcher I can be. I don't think that necessarily like a contract can determine that. I think it's just whatever. I think that if I do everything that I'm capable of as a pitcher, I think it's good for both.
I remember a line that Pat Murphy said to us about Jackson when he signed his deal. And look, people can always clamor about money that isn't theirs.
Yeah.
But the point was, I think Jackson cares more about winning than he does about being rich. And I
Definitely.
Feel like the same thing applies to you.
Yeah, I think, like, I guess I could probably get in trouble for saying this, but it's baseball, like, the money's cool. But like, what's the difference between like 40 and 20? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just not, I don't see that much of a difference to me. And I would rather play in the big leagues and compete at a high level for as long as I can than like make all of this money. That'll probably backfire.
The money perk. The money's a perk.
Yeah,
you do it because you want to pitch.
A perk, but I love pitching in the big leagues. Like, that is, it's the dream of mine since I can remember, and I've never thought about doing anything else. So once I was given that opportunity, it was just like, absolutely, like, how could you say no?
Now, another vulnerable question to follow that up: playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you had a great second half out of the bullpen. When you came back up, when you went to that role in Nashville, you were pitching well. You know, you were on fumes, I imagine, at the end of the season, given how much you were like, all right, get up, you're up again, and get hot, go. Then the playoffs obviously didn't go your way.
Yeah.
How did you have to sit with that all winter? Are you able to flush it quickly, or does it motivate you? How do you view what went wrong in the wild card series?
Yeah, I think that you definitely have a bad taste in your mouth for a long time. But it's like, I've had a bad taste in my mouth for the past, like, well, since 22 spring training.
Since you got hurt.
Since 23 spring training. And so, like, it's hard to, like, dwell so much on, you know, that three-game set when, like, the past 2.5 years before that was just, like, shitty.
Bleep.
Cough button. So it's like you definitely take like the good with the bad, and you never want to like perform that way. I think it definitely sucks to like come up short so many times in a row. But like I in general, I viewed last season as a step in the right direction for myself as like a player for the Brewers. Like, we ended healthy, ended back to where I was, if not better. And I think that like you can't dwell too much, like you'll just like suffer your whole baseball career if you like focus on one game. So you have to kind of look at it all encompassing and like realize what happened last year.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, another segment with Aaron Ashby. We turned the tables on him again, though, too. Again, my thanks to Reese and Aaron for doing this, and we'll wrap things up a little bit later on in the program, but we only got a few minutes left in the show, so here's our last segment with Aaron Ashby.
When you look at this season, this rotation, you're obviously going to be a piece of it in one role or another. Mm-hmm. When you look at the guys you have around you, Nestor, Freddie, yeah. Tobias, and then you can even throw in Savali, and you can throw in the young kids. You can throw in Henderson. You can throw in Patrick. You can throw in, I mean, there is some stuff around here.
Yeah.
How do you see the Brewers' core of starters, and I'm including mm-hmm. you in this, continue to be underrated, and how do you guys wear that as a badge of honor, and what do you want to continue to showcase as a talented group?
Yeah, I think that since I've been here, like the starting rotation has always been amazing. And then like in the most recent years, like we lose Burns, we lose Woody to injury, and then like Freddie steps up, Tobias stepped up in a huge way, and it's just like it feels like this relentless attack of guys that Jim, Hokey, the minor league pitching coordinators, coaches have like all developed just to like step into these roles so seamlessly. I mean, to like for Tobias to come up last year and do what he did, like that's just a testament to kind of the organization and like the things that we focus on, for the coordinators and Hokey and the foundation that we've laid here for guys to just like step into that role easier. I think, you know, you add Nestor, this guy's like, I mean, he's Nasty Nestor. He's awesome. I know he's a great pitcher, but like just talking to this guy the last week and a half, 2 weeks in the clubhouse, like I think he's a wonderful addition to the clubhouse. He's a great guy. He's like that show veteran guy that's just does things right and like also like treats guys with respect. I think that goes such a long way when you have a super young team, as if these like older veteran guys can like still be, maybe I don't know if it's like discipline, but like show you the right way to do things and also be like nice about it. Like I in the past that you like everyone's had a veteran guy that's kind of a jerk, mm-hmm. and it makes it a little bit harder to like feel comfortable to do your job. And I think our veteran guys, Freddie, Woody, Nestor, Savali, like all of these guys are great role models and like really make it easy for the young guys to kind of step in and be successful.
That's awesome. I think that's a great way to look at it, the player development, the pitching development that this team is so known for. But to hear it kind of put out, laid out, of understanding what Jim and Chris and everybody have done in this org. Now, I'm going to end this. We're going to wrap things up. One thing I've been doing for everybody that does a longer form interview with me mm-hmm. is I turn the mics. You can ask me about media. You can ask me about anything. Because we ask you guys a million questions. I know you guys always have questions for us. And maybe you don't get the floor to actually do so. You don't have to answer, but do you have any questions for me?
I'm sure I do. Maybe even unbaseball related, but what is... What is your favorite golf course that you've ever played?
Oh, okay. Now we might need a whole another 30 minutes to go on this, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So biased answers, Erin Hills. Like that's like the easy. Like, hey, I'm a caddy there. You know.
Yeah.
I will say this: I am very lucky to have been invited to some incredible places thanks to my boss and my mentor, and Brian Anderson.
Yeah.
He's the one who gets the invite, and I'm riding his coattails. So, this past baseball season, I got to play Marion in Philly.
Okay.
And as a golf sicko, as a golf nerd,
yeah,
people who are golf nerds are like, oh my God, like they understand. And playing Marion, it'll host the U.S. Open again in a few years.
It
host Justin Rose won there. Ben Hogan won. I mean, it's as a
story.
Again, as a sicko, we went to the history room. It was just an amazing day.
Awesome.
Marion's at the top of that list. But memory wise, I did get to play Pebble Beach with my dad a few years ago.
Very cool.
And very sentimental for us.
Yeah.
Did that over an All-Star break. Only time I've ever played Pebble Beach, you know, walking around that corner 6, 7, 8 on the ocean.
Yeah,
that's the more sentimental answer there too. Good
like
question.
That.
You're
like
in.
That.
Might need to do a whole other golf side and like just do like everything will be golf related on a pod.
There should be like a not an episode, but a series on non-baseball stuff. I think that would connect with the fan more.
I like that. Like no baseball allowed.
No baseball allowed.
Ooh.
No baseball allowed.
You're creating some content for me here,
talk
man.
About like hobbies, life. I don't know.
I'm in. I'm
maybe.
All in on this.
It might not work. It could completely flop on the face.
No, I think because you guys know how to answer everything cliched, which is fine.
Yeah.
But if we talk about something like, look, I'm not going to name any names in there, but we could talk about like conspiracy theories with some guys in there. And guys will keep running with that. You said it, not me.
I'll leave that up.
Maybe I'll have to cut that part out.
Maybe.
Ash, thank you for the time.
Yeah,
best
you.
Of health.
You,
best
Dom.
Of luck this season.
Appreciate
and looking forward to doing it again, maybe.
Thank you. Thank you, Dom.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, we got a few minutes left of leftover time here on a busy Wednesday night edition of Brewers Weekly. My thanks to our producer, Nate Rilling. I'm Dom Cotroneo. So let's just sort of debrief here for a second and kind of take in what we just heard from those guys. And by the way, the individual interviews are available in podcast form, Brewers All Access, wherever you get your pods. I see there's a few hundred people watching on Twitter. It's usually about 100 people watching on YouTube live, so appreciate you guys being here live. Tell your friends if you want some quality Brewers content, be here all year for you, man. And we're with you after most games. Generally, weekday day games are the only days we don't have a post game show, but I'll be with you for post game shows right here as well. And we're 4 weeks away. I mean, I just like when Murph said that today in the manager session, I was like, 4 weeks. That sounds like a long time. And then he's sitting here like, oh, it's really not that long of a time. But it's been a whirlwind first week of camp, of at least with position players here and everyone moving around and having some fun. And this week, finally get the first off day of camp too, next Tuesday. If the folks that are planning a trip, and if you're coming down, whatever, I know spring break this year in Wisconsin is a little bit later in March, so it doesn't really do well for the kiddos trying to come down to spring training. But if you've never been to spring training, let me give you a quick guide, a quick, you know, hitchhiker's guide to the galaxy, if you will, from almost a native Phoenician. I wasn't born here, but my mom's a native, you know, Arizonan, so I grew up here. I think I know the area pretty well. Here's the thing. The beauty of the Brewers ballpark, when you map it out to the rest of Phoenix, it's central. It's Phoenix. Merrivale is the specific neighborhood that it is in. You can stay in downtown Phoenix, where there's a plethora of hotels and Airbnbs available, downtown, uptown, whatever it is, and make it to Brewers camp in 20 minutes. You will need a rental car or an Uber, whatever you decide to do. The beauty of that is that you can branch off to all of the other ones by being centrally located if the Brewers are your priority. Now, if you want the nightlife and the other activities and maybe a younger crowd, depending on your definition of a younger crowd, if you're from Arizona and you know about Scottsdale, you know what I mean by that. Scottsdale, Northeast Valley, that's where the Giants, that's where the Diamondbacks and Rockies are. You're not far from Mesa, which is where the Cubs and the A's are. So you've got plenty to choose from in that kind of pocket. You've also got the Angels in Tempe, but in all my love to the Angels, I do not recommend Tempe Diablo. It's just not a great ballpark. My favorite is Salt River Fields. Hands down, not even close, best ballpark in the Cactus League. It is better than some big league parks. And it's not just the ones you're thinking of. Anyway, that whole area, Scottsdale, Old Town, there's Airbnbs and hotels available up there. There's plenty of shopping. There's plenty of restaurants. There's some great stuff up there. If you want a little slower paced, retirees, just want to go watch ball, don't care about the other activities, West Valley is your bet. You've got, obviously, the Brewers. The Maryvale favors slightly west, but you've got Brewers there in Maryvale. But then you've also got Glendale, which is where the Cardinals play, but you've got, as in the Arizona Cardinals, but you've got the Dodgers and the White Sox just about 2 miles from where the Cardinals play. And there's an entertainment district over there. It's called Westgate. It's where the Coyotes used to play. And that's a good area, too. Then you've got Goodyear, which is retiree central, way out in west. And then even more northwest is Surprise. That's where the Royals and the Rangers are. Goodyear is the Ohio teams. So if you're just in it for the baseball, and you're okay driving a lot of places, the West Valley is where you're going to want to be. But you're going to be extremely far from any other activities, as in the Phoenix Zoo or Scottsdale or some of the better hiking. If you're a hiking person, you want to hike Camelback. Let me be real here for a second, okay? To everybody in Wisconsin, the Kettle Moraine, if you've done those hikes and you've done those rolling hills, those are fun, right? Camelback is not that. It's not even close. You are going to be on all fours at some points of Camelback. Do not be surprised. They say, oh, well, one side's easier than the other. No, they're both hard. Don't lie to yourself. They are both trails are hard at Camelback. The view is beautiful. It's a rewarding hike. It's a long hike. Bring your own water. Be careful. Hold the rails. If you don't want to do the difficulty of Camelback but still want to feel the reward of a hike, go to Piestewa. Silly name, very popular hike amongst Brewers staffers and broadcasters alike. It's north central Phoenix, not far if you choose to stay in downtown Phoenix. Piestewa, great, known for having a false peak. You'll know it when you see it, when you're walking up that. And in Scottsdale, there are a few hikes too. If you want to stay in the East Valley, which is like Mesa, Tempe, over there, that's, you can go way out in like Superstitions. You can go way out to Fort McDowell. And if you're a gambler, trust me, plenty to choose from. A lot to choose from. Now, one last piece of advice if you're planning an Arizona spring training visit. If you're going to come to the ballpark and just, let's say you want to come to the ballpark and you want your kids to get a photo with a player, you want them to get autographs, you got to hype them up. And here's why. You got to be there early. I'm not saying sunrise. Generally, there's activity on the fields 10-ish, 11-ish, depending on the day. And even if it's not the big leaguers back there, minor league camp is about to start. So you can see Jesus Madé. You'll see Cooper Pratt when he gets reassigned. You'll see the Stars of Tomorrow beforehand. And there's all other people down there, too. The beauty of the Brewers complex is that you walk through the backfields to get to the ballpark. So there's no excuse not to sit and see and watch. And you're right up on a chain link fence and separated from the best players in the world. I think that's just so, so cool. And you must make that a chance. Try to get some photos. Try to get some autographs. Have a grand time at spring training. And finally, one last little thing, too. If you think you're going to the Grand Canyon when you're coming to Phoenix, just fly to Vegas. Just fly to Vegas. It's not that close. It really isn't. Just fly to Vegas. That'll make everyone easier. It's a long road trip. It's a hard drive. It's beautiful, but just go to Vegas. It's a lot quicker. There are flights every day. Okay, jam-packed show, and yet we've got another one on Friday. We're scheduled to have Matt Arnold join us. We'll have plenty of conversation with him. My thanks again to Nate, our producer. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.